Chapter 56. The Last Chapter. Glowing Embers. The high window had more than enough room for Rand to stand in it, stretching far above his head and clearing his shoulders by 2 feet to either side. Shirt sleeves rolled up, he stared down at one of the royal palace's gardens. Avienda was trailing her hand in the fountain's redstone basin, still intrigued by so much water with no purpose but to be looked at and keep ornamental fish alive. She had been more than indignant at first when he told her she could not go chasing trollocs through the streets. In fact, he was not sure she would be down there now if not for a quiet escort of maidens that Sulin did not think he had noticed. Neither was he supposed to have heard the white-haired maiden remind her that she was Vardarai's Mai no longer, and not yet a wise one. Coatless, but wearing his hat against the sun, Matt was sitting on the coping of the basin, talking to her. No doubt, probing for what she knew of whether the Aiel were preventing people from leaving. Even if Matt did decide to accept his fate, it was unlikely he would ever stop complaining about it. Asmodian sat on a bench in the shade of a red myrtle tree, playing his harp. Rand wondered whether the man knew what had happened, or suspected. He should have no memory. For him, it never happened. But who could say what one of the Forsaken knew or could reason out? A polite cough turned him away from the garden. The window where he stood was a span and a half above the floor in the west wall of the throne room, the grand hall where queens of Endor had received embassies and pronounced judgment for nearly 1,000 years. It was the only place he had thought he could be sure of watching Matt and Avienda unseen and undisturbed. Rows of white columns, 20 paces high, marched down the sides of the hall. The light from the tall windows in the walls mingled with colored light from great windows set in the arching ceiling, windows where the white lion alternated with portraits of early queens of the realm and scenes of great Andoran victories. Enyla and Samara did not appear impressed. Rand let himself down by his fingertips. "Is there news from Vale?" Enyla shrugged.
"The hunt for Trollocs goes on."
By her tone, the diminutive woman would have liked to be part of that. Samara's height made her seem even shorter.
"Some of the city people give aid. Most hide. The city gates are held. None of the Shadow Twisted will escape, I think. But I fear some of the Nightrunners may."
Myrdral were hard to kill, and just as hard to corner. Sometimes it was easy to believe the old tales that they rode shadows and could vanish by turning sideways.
"We brought you some soup," Samara said, nodding her flaxen head toward a silver tray covered with a striped cloth, sitting on the dais that held the lion throne. Carved and gilded, with huge lion's paws at the ends of its legs, the throne was a massive chair at the top of 4 white marble stairs, with a strip of red carpet leading up to it. The lion of Andor, picked out in moonstones on a field of rubies, would have stood above Morghese's head whenever she occupied that seat.
"Avienda says you have not eaten yet today. It is the soup Lamel used to make for you."
"I suppose none of the servants have come back," Rand sighed.
"One of the cooks, maybe? A helper?"
Enyla shook her head scornfully. She would serve her time as Guy Shine with a good grace if it ever came to that, but the idea of anyone spending their entire life serving someone else disgusted her. Climbing the stairs, he squatted to twitch the cloth aside. His nose twitched, too. By the smell, whichever of them had made it was no better a cook than Lamel had been. The sound of a man's boots coming up the hall gave him an excuse to turn his back on the tray. With any luck, he would not have to eat it. The man approaching up the long red-and-white tiled floor was certainly no Anderman. In his short gray coat and those baggy trousers stuffed into boots turned down at the knee. Slender, and only a head taller than Enyla, he had a hooked beak of a nose and dark, tilted eyes. Gray streaked his black hair and a thick mustache, like down-curved horns around his wide mouth. He paused to make a leg and bow slightly, handling the curved sword at his hip gracefully, despite the fact that, incongruously,
He carried 2 silver goblets in one hand and a sealed pottery jar in the other.
"Forgive my intrusion," he said. "But there was no one to announce me."
His clothes might be plain and even travel-worn, but he had what appeared to be an ivory rod capped with a golden wolf's head thrust behind his sword belt.
"I am Davram Bashir, Marshal General of Saldaea. I am here to speak with the Lord Dragon, who rumors in the city say is here in the royal palace. I assume that I address him?"
For an instant his eyes went to the glittering dragons, twining red and gold around Rand's arms.
"I am Randall Thor, Lord Bashir, the Dragon Reborn."
Inila and Samara had moved between Rand and the man, each with a hand on the hilt of her long-bladed knife, poised to veil.
"I am surprised to find a Saldaean lord in Camelon, much less wanting to speak to me."
"In truth, I rode to Camelon to speak to Morgaze, but I was put off by Lord Gabriel's toadies. King Gabriel, I should say. Or does he still live?"
Bashir's tone said he doubted it, and did not care one way or the other. He did not pause.
"Many in the city say Morgaze is dead as well."
"They're both dead," Rand said bleakly.
He sat down on the throne, his head resting against the moonstone line of Andor. The throne had been sized for women.
"I killed Gabriel, but not before he killed Morgaze."
Bashir quirked an eyebrow.
"Should I hail King Rand of Andor, then?"
Rand leaned forward angrily.
"Andor has always had a queen, and it still does. Elaine was daughter heir. With her mother dead, she is queen. Maybe she has to be crowned first, I don't know the law. But she is queen as far as I'm concerned. I am the Dragon Reborn. That is as much as I want and more."
"What is it you want of me, Lord Bashir?" If his anger disturbed Bashir at all, the man gave no outward sign. Those tilted eyes watched Rand carefully, but not uneasily.
"The White Tower allowed Mazrim Taim to escape. The false dragon."
He paused, then went on when Rand said nothing.
"Queen Tenobia did not want Saldaea troubled again. So I was sent to hunt him down once more and put an end to him. I have followed him south for many weeks. You need not fear I've brought a foreign army into Andor. Except for an escort of 10, the rest I left camped in Brame Wood, well north of any border Andor has claimed in 200 years. But Taim is in Andor. I am sure of it."
Rand leaned back again, hesitating.
"You cannot have him, Lord Bashir."
"May I ask why not, my Lord Dragon? If you wish to use Aiel to hunt him, I have no objection. My men will remain in Brame Wood until I return."
This part of his plan he had not meant to reveal so soon. Delay could be costly, but he had intended to have a firm hold on the nations first.
Yet it might as well begin now.
"I am announcing an amnesty. I can channel Lord Bashir. Why should another man be hunted down and killed or gentled because he can do what I can? I will announce that any man who can touch the true source, any man who wants to learn, can come to me and have my protection. The last battle is coming, Lord Bashir. There may not be time for any of us to go mad before, and I would not waste one man for the risk anyway. When the Trollocs came out of the Blight in the Trolloc Wars, they marched with dreadlords, men and women who wielded the power for the Shadow. We will face that again at Tarmangaden. I don't know how many Aes Sedai will be at my side, but I won't turn away any man who channels, if he will march with me.
Mazrim Taim is mine, Lord Bashir, not yours."
"I see."
It was flatly said.
"You have taken Camelon. I hear that Tyr is yours, and Cairhien soon will be, if it is not already. Do you mean to conquer the world with your Aiel and your army of men channeling the One Power?" if I must."
Rand said it just as levelly. "I'll welcome any ruler as an ally who welcomes me, but so far all I've seen is maneuvering for power or outright hostility. Lord Bashir, there's anarchy in Taraban and Ar-Adaman, and not far from it in Kyrian. Amadisia is eyeing Altara. The Shonchan, you may have heard rumors of them in Saldaea, the worst are likely true. The Shonchan on the other side of the world eyeing us all. Men fighting their own petty battles with Tarmangaden on the horizon. We need peace. Time before the Trollocs come, before the Dark One breaks free. Time to ready ourselves. If the only way I can find time and peace for the world is to impose it, I will. I don't want to, but I will."
"I have read the Kariathon cycle," Bashir said.
Putting the goblets under his arm for a moment, he broke the wax seal on the jar and filled them with wine.
"More importantly, Queen Tenobia has read the prophecies too. I cannot speak for Kandor, or Arafel, or Shinar. I believe they will come to you. Not a child in the Borderlands but knows the shadow waits in the Blight to descend on us. But I cannot speak for them."
And Nyla eyed the goblet he handed her suspiciously, but she climbed the stairs to hand it to Rand.
"In truth," Bashir continued, "I cannot even speak for Saldaea. Tenobia rules. I am only her general. But I think once I send a fast rider to her with a message, the return will be that Saldaea marches with the Dragon Reborn. In the meanwhile, I offer you my services and those of 9,000 Saldaean horse."
Rand swirled the goblet, staring down into the dark red wine. Samael, in Ilion, and other Forsaken the Light alone knew where. Shonchan waiting across the Arath Ocean, and men here ready to leap for their own advantage and profit, whatever it cost the world.
"Peace is far off yet," he said softly.
"It will be blood and death for some time to come."
"It always is," Bashir replied quietly,
and Rand did not know which statement he was speaking to. Perhaps both. Tucking his harp under his arm, Asmodian drifted away from Matt and Avienda. He enjoyed playing, but not for a pair who did not listen, much less appreciate. He was not sure what had happened that morning, and not sure he wanted to be sure. Too many Aiel had expressed surprise at seeing him, had claimed they had seen him dead. He did not want details. There was a long gash down the wall in front of him. He knew what made that sharp edge, that surface as slick as ice, smoother than any hand could have polished it in 100 years. Idly, but with a shiver, too, he wondered whether being reborn in this fashion made him a new man. He did not think so. Immortality was gone. That was a gift of the Great Lord. He used that name in his head, whatever Althor demanded on his tongue. That was proof enough that he was himself. Immortality gone, he knew it must be imagination, yet sometimes he thought he could feel time dragging at him, pulling him toward a grave he had never thought to meet. And drawing the little of Saiyadin he could was like drinking sewage. He was hardly sorry Lanfear was dead, Ravin either, but Lanfear especially for what she had done to him. He would laugh when each of the others died, too, and most for the last. It was not that he had been reborn as a new man at all, but he would cling to that tuft of grass on the cliff's brink as long as he could. The roots would give way eventually, the long fall would come, but until then he was still alive. He pulled open a small door, intending to find his way to the pantry. There should be some decent wine. One step, and he stopped, the blood draining from his face.
"You! No!"
The word still hung in the air when death took him.
Morgay's blotted sweat from her face, then tucked the handkerchief back up her sleeve and readjusted her somewhat ragged straw hat. At least she had managed to acquire a decent riding dress, though even fine gray wool was still uncomfortable in this heat. Actually, Talonvor had acquired it. Letting her horse walk, she eyed the tall young man, riding up ahead through the trees. Bessel Gill's roundness emphasized how tall and fit Talonvor was. He had handed the dress to her, saying it suited her better than the itchy thing she had fled the palace in, looking down at her, never blinking, never speaking a word of respect. Of course, she herself had decided it was not safe for anyone to know who she was, especially after discovering Gareth Bryn gone from Cor Springs. Why did the man have to be off chasing barn burners when she needed him? No matter, she would do as well without him. But there was something disturbing in Talonvor's eyes when he called her simply Morgay's. Sighing, she glanced back over her shoulder. Hulking Lamgwyn rode watching the forest, Brianna at his side watching him as much as anything else. Her army had not grown a whit since Camelin. Too many had heard of nobles exiled for no cause and unjust laws in the capital to do more than scoff at the most casual mention of stirring a hand in support of their rightful ruler. She doubted that even knowing who spoke them would have made a difference. So here she rode through Altara, keeping to forest as much as possible, because there seemed to be parties of armed men everywhere. Rode through the forest with a scar-faced street tough, a besotted refugee Kyrianan noblewoman, a stout innkeeper who could hardly keep from kneeling whenever she glanced at him, and a young soldier who sometimes looked at her as though she had on one of those dresses she had worn for Gabriel. And Lini, of course. There was no forgetting Lini. As if thinking of her had been a summons, the old nurse heeled her horse closer. "Better to keep your eyes ahead," she said quietly. "A young lion charges quickest, and when you least expect it." "You think Talonvor is dangerous?" Morgay's said sharply, and Lini gave her a sidelong, considering look. "Only the way any man can be dangerous. A fine figure of a man, don't you think? More than tall enough. Strong hands, I should think. There's no point letting honey age too long before you eat it." "Lini," Morgay's said warningly. The old woman had been going on this way too often of late. Talonvor was a handsome man, his hands did look strong, and he had a well-turned calf. But he was young, and she was his queen. The last thing she needed was to start looking at him as a man instead of her subject and soldier. She was about to tell Lini that, and that the woman had lost her wits if she thought she was going to take up with any man 10 years her junior. He had to be that. But Talonvor and Gil were turning back. "You hold your tongue, Lini. If you put foolish ideas into that young man's head, I will leave you somewhere." Lini's snort would have earned the highest noble in Andor time in a cell to meditate. If she still had her throne, it would. "Are you sure you want to do this, girl? It's too late to change your mind after you've jumped off the cliff." "I will find my allies where I can find them," Morgay's told her stiffly. Talonvor reined up, sitting tall in his saddle. Sweat rolled down his face, but he seemed to ignore the heat. Master Gil tugged at the neck of his disc-covered jerkin as though he wished he could have it off. "The wood gives way to farms just ahead," Talonvor said, "but it isn't likely anyone will recognize you here." Morgay's met his gaze levelly. Day by day it was becoming increasingly hard to look away when he was looking at her. "Another 10 miles should take us to Cormaid. If that fellow in Sahar was not lying, there will be a ferry, and we can be on the Amadisia side before dark. Are you certain you want to do this, Morgay's?"
The way he said her name.
No. She was letting Lini's ridiculous fancies take hold of her. It was the accursed heat. "I have made up my mind, young Talonvor," she said coolly, "and I do not expect you to question me when I have done so." She heeled her mount hard, letting the horses leap forward, break their gazes apart, letting it shove past him. He could catch up to her. She would find her allies where she found them. She would have her throne back. And woe to Gabriel, or any man, who thought he could sit on it in her place.